You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Mill. Last week, I had promised you a second part to my interview with veteran player and the Miami Heat director of scouting, Keith Askins, on Friday, but I decided to hold off because I didn't want any confusion about the two shows, thinking that you had already listened to one episode or maybe you hadn't even realized that there was a second episode or anything like that. So my apologies for that, but I did want to make sure that I give you some space in between both interviews. So here, as promised, is part two, and it's really, really good. Keith continues talking about what it's like to work with Pat Riley as part of the Heat organization for three decades, those classic battles against the New York Knicks, who he thinks is the best shooter in franchise history, including a name you might not have thought about in a long time, and if the Big Three could knock off Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls teams for the 1990s. Like I said, it's a packed episode that's been one of my favorite interviews of all time. So here is part two of my conversation with Heat lifer Keith Askins. One of the things that always strikes me when it comes to Riley, and I'll kind of stick to this for a little bit, is that I remember hearing an interview with, I guess, one of your former teammates, Sean Marks. Did you guys were on the roster at the same time?
Yeah.
So with Sean, when he got the job over in Brooklyn, he spoke about his experiences learning from Coach Riley and also from R.C. Buford in San Antonio when he played with the Spurs. And one of the things that he said about Riley that always stood out to me was, we always see this image of Riley as being somewhat ruthless with the slick back hair. And, you know, obviously you spoke about the teams he created that were so physical and everything else. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really always stood out to Sean was how Riley always remembered his kid's name and how he always related on a very human level. And that's what's always helped him stand out as a coach, as a person, and as a front office executive, is just being able to connect on a very human level.
He connects, man. I mean, you know, you're talking about a man that can walk in a room and he's not introduced, but you can feel him. You know, it's not like, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mr. Pat Riley. He can sneak in the room and his aura, you can feel him. You know, I mean, and what I really learned from him during my times of playing is that, you know, there's when it's going to start, and you pretty much, you'll know the end because everything is just very structured. You'll have your meeting to begin the day. You know, he may speak to you for 15 minutes. He could speak to you for an hour, but he's going to speak to you every day. He's going to tell you he's going to give you the plan. Then we'll go do it. And it was like that every day, you know, there wasn't a lot of gray. It was black and white. I mean, we had rules that we went by. You either did it or you didn't. And if you didn't do it, and if you weren't part of the team, like I said, you're either with us or you're against us, you're gone. I mean, you got to have, and to this day, we still, when we're finding players, there's certain things that you got to be able, we look for in a player because, you know, it may not be for everyone. You could be as talented as – you can be the most talented kid on the court. But if you're missing one of these key ingredients that we look for, we may pass on.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that a little bit later in the show, but this is a good segue now. I mean, I think as a director of scouting, obviously you have some perspective on what players – how that talent will translate, but there's always an X factor there. And I think obviously the Heat as an organization is well renowned for being able to see a player that might be a diamond in the rough and hasn't been discovered yet. Does that come from your own experience as an undrafted player? I remember talking, I did a story on Chris Silva earlier this year, and I talked to Udonis Haslem and Duncan Robinson, both who were undrafted players themselves. And they both mentioned the same thing, which is that there's always a little edge to being undrafted, a little chip on your shoulder that you carry with you throughout the rest of your career and kind of pushes you to work a little harder. Is that something that you look for as an organization when you're trying to find the right player that has that kind of edge to them?
Well, you're looking for a kid that's willing to work first and foremost.
Right.
He has to have a will to work and willing to, and not only that, you know, you got to have a, what we call a BBIQ. I mean, you got to You got to be able now, you really need to be able to process information, you know, fairly quickly. Because in today's game, there's not a lot of court time unless you're doing your individual development. So you have to be able to learn on the fly, and you have to be able to apply, you know, just by talk instead of having to go through drill. There's not a lot of drill time anymore, not a lot of drill work as far as teams. So you got to be able to have conversations, watch on film, and then go out and apply it, you know, with the amount of games that guys are playing, and, you know, the court time is less, you know, for practice. So, you know, we look at all that. And the most important part is that, you know, it has to be a kid that's, as I said, willing to work and a good person. I mean, you don't want any, you know, you don't want any assholes on your team.
You know,
let's put it this way. The better the talent, the more asshole you can have a little asshole in you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't be a non-drafted player and be an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I remember talking to Frank Martin when I was doing the story on Silva, and he said that, you know, that what a great kid he was, always willing to work hard and everything else like that. And he had all the intangibles, and you kind of see that in his dedication, the fact that he's able to come from Africa to be able to just find his way on the basketball court. I mean, that's an incredible story there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, you know, not only Chris and Duncan, but look at
Kendrick.
Look at Kendrick Nunn. I mean, he's another, you know, and, you know, for whatever reason, he was passed over. You know, you got to be willing to look at a kid and say, you know what? Shoot, man, he's had a year, you know, he had a year in the G League in which, you know, I guess the problem more than anything was people's thinking about what happened to him years ago in college with an old girlfriend. Right. I mean, this kid has been a model citizen for years after that, and he can flat out play. So, you know, sometimes you got to be willing to take a chance and give someone else a second chance, or give him a chance to show that he can succeed and belong.
I wanted to jump back a little bit and kind of go back to Riley. He takes over the team and he trades away Glenn Rice, who I assume was a friend of yours on the team. Were you surprised to see Rice moved in exchange for Alonzo Mourning?
Well, you know, one of the first things that you learn is that, you know, you start thinking about history. No one is untradeable.
Right.
I mean, if Kareem Abdul-Jabbar can be traded,
why not
me? Why not you? I mean, everyone. And when he was billing, he came in to build a team. He was trying to get pieces that he felt fit what he was trying to do. And Glenn was probably our best player at the time, which he used to bring in Enzo.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I mean, you know, you give him credit. I mean, that's when the game was being played from inside to out.
Right.
And to get an inside presence, not only offensively, but defensively, for Glenn was huge.
Where does G-Money rank on your all-time great Heat shooters? Because, like, he's up there for me. I've never seen anybody shoot like him.
Yeah, you know, there's only one other guy. Well, you know, Duncan is becoming a pretty good shooter. But, you know, there's two guys that I played with. That was Glenn and Sasha.
Yeah.
That could just flat out shoot the ball. You know, Dan could get on a roll as well. But Glenn and Sasha, you know, I saw them give – I saw Glenn go for 50 on nothing but jumpers.
Yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah.
That was a tremendous game, yeah.
Oh, incredible game. And Sasha, you know, Sasha comes over and, you know, he had his pace and he had high release. He could use the bump and get his shot off. He could catch and shoot. He could create separation with the 1-2 dribble, step back for his jumper. You know, both of them were fun to play with and good teammates.
Danilovic, you know, he came into the league at the wrong time. In today's right. league, he's a European player back in the 90s. He wasn't going to fit in as well.
No, it was too much of a – I think it was the league was still fairly physical at that time.
Sure.
And the emphasis on defense, individually was there. Now you see more teams going to – with the rule changes, you have more teams playing zone. The pick and roll schemes have gotten softer than they were at the time. And so it was required more to be physical than having, the finesse skill.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll get to more of my conversation with Keith in the next segment, where he names who he thinks is the best shooter in franchise history. You're listening to Locked On Heat. The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. I was a really picky eater as a kid. I was not the healthiest. I'll be 100% honest with you. I used to eat a lot of junk. Particularly, one of the things I loved the most, especially in the mornings, was cereal. I was a Fruit Loops fanatic. I know if you remember any old episodes between me and my former co-host, Wes Goldberg, we would talk about cereal all the time, and cereal was just a lot of fun. But then as you get older, you realize, well, I can't eat as much cereal as I used to because, you try to cut down on carbs or sugar or just generally unhealthy foods, and next thing you know, no more Cookie Crisp or Fruit Loops or anything of the like. But that's why this product, Magic Spoon, is such a great find. It's got zero sugars, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. There are 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. I like the fruity. My wife likes the cocoa. We both are split on the frosted and blueberry. It's amazing. They taste too good to be true, and they're just keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. So it's just amazing. You can get your own variety pack of all 4 flavors. You can absolutely just get 4 of one flavor, whatever you prefer. And if you go to magicspoon.com/NBA, that's magicspoon.com/NBA, grab a variety pack and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code NBA at checkout so you can get free shipping on that. Believe me, you won't be disappointed. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/NBA and use the promo code NBA for free shipping. We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring this podcast. I did want to ask you a little bit because you were an active player there, and I think for a lot of my listeners and Heat fans in general, the classic Heat battles versus the New York Knicks really defined that era. And I mean, that was probably the peak of your career, playing alongside guys like Tim Hardaway, Alonzo, mm-hmm. Dan Majerle. It was such a great, deep team. And yet somehow, unfortunately, you were never really able to achieve that kind of success. What are your, 20 years later, what are your thoughts about that series and how you always matched up? There was so much. Was that animosity as real as it felt from the outside perspective?
Well, you had a lot. There was, I think, off the court, there were stories off the court. You had Riles in New York. You got Alonzo and Pat, friends, but now they're foes.
Right. Larry Johnson later on, too.
Larry Johnson and Zoe teammates, and then you got speculations on them and their relationship. So there was a lot of things. You got Oakley trying to be a tough guy and Mace trying to be a tough guy.
You say so, trying to be, but Oakley is always one of those guys that has that reputation, one of those reputations that you never want to meet in a back alley kind of thing. Is it fake tough guy talk or real tough guy talk?
No. I don't know. I'm not going to disrespect anyone in any way. Cause I don't know Oakley like that. I've met him in passing, then, maybe had a drink with him somewhere here or there. But, when I say, trying to be tough, there's an intimidation, trying to intimidate you on the court with, you know, if you're 6'6", 6'7", 195, 210, no more than 210, and you're looking at somebody 6'9", 250, all muscled up, you know, and they're swelling up at you, you know, that's what I call, you know, trying to be tough.
Right.
But, you know, they were physical, man. And every night you had to make sure you're ready to compete physically, because if you weren't, they would beat you down. I mean, they'll beat you down until you couldn't do it. And
but you guys were like that too. You were kind of mirror images of one another.
There you go. It was like looking at yourself in the mirror.
Right.
And you know, we prided ourselves in not backing down, and they did the same thing. So, you know, it led for physical confrontations. I mean, you know, one of the players that people really don't talk about at that time, I think Harper may have still been. Was Derek Harper still a part of that program?
He was early on, and then eventually it was Chris Childs and Charlie Child, Ward. Yeah.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, everybody had that physical aspect going on, and it just made it, I mean, you know, for guys getting up in their careers and haven't felt that ultimate joy of winning a championship, you know, it comes down, you can't go to the second unless you win the first. So a lot of our battles took one of us out, and they got the best of us.
Why did they get the best out of you? Because I last week I was actually doing a kind of a retrospective on that era. And I was just looking at it, and I just, again, going through that roster, it was so deep. And Jamal Mashburn, a guy that doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah.
He's always been he's such a versatile player. Like in today's game, he would probably be an all-star many times over.
Yeah.
And just, I looked at that Heat roster, and again, you were very evenly matched with the Knicks. But was there something missing now in hindsight that you thought maybe that Heat roster didn't have whatever it takes to get to that next level and become a champion? Or was it just bad luck?
No, I wouldn't say it was bad luck. It was just, you know, and when you think about the losses and the eliminations, I mean, it was like one play here or there.
Yeah.
You go, you know, you make one play, you advance, and you know, give New York credit. They made the plays and we didn't. We had enough. We had enough. I mean, you talk about a team of Tim, Bashawn Leonard, who was a deadly spot shooter, as well as could do it on the catch and shoot on the move. You had Jamal, who was a multifaceted, he could be considered a point forward now.
For sure.
PJ, one of the better power forwards, defenders, as well as mid-range shooters. And then Zoe. And then you think about when we added, you know, we got Dan, myself, Ike Austin. Shoot, man, it was a pretty good team.
Oh, without a doubt.
So we were good, but New York, you know, give them credit. They made the plays at the end to win the game. I mean, you know, you have a blown, if you blow a defensive assignment, you know, and they'll at that point of time in a series and they make the play, shame on you.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because I feel like, you know, it's somewhat romanticized by a lot of Heat fans because those games were so fun and brutal. And it was a different era. I mean, everybody talks about how low scoring they were. But I mean, looking back at those games, it was just back and forth. And to end almost always in the last second of the last shot of the last game of a series, it's just amazing to look back at those. You retired in 99, and then, of course, Miami went and had another run-in with the Knicks later that year in 2000. But then, of course, after 2000, that's when Alonzo Mourning's kidney disease flared up. And from that perspective, you were working as an unpaid assistant coach at that point in time. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So were you there on the sidelines then as you're seeing that other team with Anthony Mason and Brian Grant and Eddie Jones? From my perspective, Pat Riley needed to kind of retool the team a little bit because you hadn't been able to get past the Knicks, but you kind of wanted to retool around Zoe and Tim. and you add in these players like Brian, who was at his peak, and Eddie Jones was a very good versatile player. What was the vibe like about that 2000-2001 team? Because to me, it always seems like that's one of the bigger questions in franchise history, is it could have gone very differently if Alonzo had been healthy for the whole season.
Well, you know, that team was built. I mean, you know, the team was being built around Zoe.
Yeah.
And, you know, you added pieces again. You know, you could probably say Brian Grant and PJ, they're similar games. Eddie was an amazing wing player, man. Real good in transition, slasher. He could, you know, good finish at the rim and, you know, could shoot the ball. But, you know, when Zoe went down, it's kind of like you build a house. If you build a house and your foundation cracks,
yeah,
you know, everything's going to be weaker. I mean, that's why you have, you know, you think about the formation of a team. Teams put together their star players in which the offense is built around. Role players don't play well unless the star players play well.
Right.
You know, they, if your stud, if your main player is playing well, you would hope one of your role players come in and his game will elevate as well. You know, because he can't elevate his game by himself. He needs someone to help him. So therefore the star players like Timmy and Zoe at that time before Zoe is, you know, went down really helped elevate everyone else's game. So you take away Zoe. And now the burden becomes heavier on Eddie. It becomes heavier on Brian. And that's not what they came in to be. They came in to play off Zoe.
Right. The complementary players.
Yeah, complementary. I mean, they weren't being built around. They came in, you know, they were coming in to add to Zoe, not be without him.
Okay, the big three of Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh knock off Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls. Keith gives his take in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. If you're like me, you don't have a lot of time, but you still want to be able to improve in whatever ways possible, and I can't speak highly enough about Blinkist. You go to Blinkist.com. It's really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. You know how to use it by now. Just go to Blinkist.com, sign up for an account today, and what you do is it gives you thousands of nonfiction books broken down into just 15 minutes that you can listen to anytime you want or read anytime you want. Whenever you have that time in a very busy schedule, Blinkist.com is there to help you improve your life. You can download thousands of different books, so many different subjects on just anything you might possibly think of, from religion to history. My father-in-law is a history buff. My dad's a history buff. It's been such a great Father's Day present. Make sure to sign them up for Blinkist.com. So when you go, you just go to Blinkist.com. So that's Blinkist.com/NBA, and you can start your free 7-day trial. It's a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, and you try it free for 7 days, and then you get 25% off your new subscription. That's amazing, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. Well, I've got a couple more questions before I let you go. One, it was an incident. Well, there were two incidents, one during your playing career and one after your playing career, which I find pretty interesting. The after the playing career, I think everybody is pretty familiar with, which is the Ron Artest situation. I know you've talked about it in the past, but to me, I remember being a fan watching the game and seeing you kind of stand up to Artest and realizing, well, that maybe at that point in time he had bit off more than he could chew, because I thought you were going to knock his head off, to be completely honest with you. I know the play played out pretty, from what I recall, he shoved Caron Butler out of bounds pretty hard, forced him to the floor, and next thing you know, he gets into it with Riles,
right.
And then you kind of stand up and said something to Artest. What was anything that you could really add some light to what was said between you and Artest at that point? Yeah,
there wasn't much said. You know, I basically told him, you know, he really doesn't know who he's messing with.
Right.
And that was the extent of it. You know, I never, you know, like I said, you know, one thing I never did, I never talked to opposing coaches, you know, And I think that's just the way I grew up. I went out to do my job. You know, I was I was nasty with it at times, but I did what I tried to do. I tried to do everything I could to help my team win. And as a coach, and you're sitting right, and I had, you know, I was fortunate to sit right next to, you know, Coach Riley, and I'm not going to let someone come and, you know, be disrespectful and actually almost threatful to him, right. You know? So, you know, any good soldier is going to stand up for his leader. I mean, be better for me to go than him.
Right. That's a good point. And kind of as a natural segue there, you were willing to do what it takes. And I found this interesting because I had totally forgotten about this incident, but you had a couple games where you were suspended for a particularly hard foul on Keith Van Horn. Do you remember this at all?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And then Jason Williams wrote about you in his book, his autobiography, which I don't want to get into the detail, but he was not very complimentary of you. But do you remember that play at all? Because I don't remember it all that well, but he makes it sound like you basically, like you were being a thug out there and kind of trying to hurt Van Horn. But I don't recall that at all.
You know, that's what happens when you know, first of all, Jason really doesn't know me, so he shouldn't write anything about me being a thug.
Yeah.
Secondly, you know, we were competing, and they were really putting it on us. You know, they were beating us pretty bad, and you know, a lot of talk started to happen. You know, and it was I remember the play. I think it was a fast break. Maybe it was 2-on-1.
Yeah.
So to speak, and I'm back there, and you know, it was the thing about no layups. I mean, we didn't give up layups.
That's right.
And so I made a play at the I consider myself to make a play at the ball, but I did come up with a lot of body. And you know, hey, I fouled him hard. You know, if you go back and you look at the foul that Mikhail put on Kurt Rambis, it wasn't as hard as that.
Yeah, he just fell awkwardly. So yeah.
Yeah, he just fell awkward. I mean, we both go up. We go up. I go up. We go body to body. He goes down. I land on my feet, I think.
Yeah.
So it goes on. They throw me out because I've had a reputation of making hard fouls and doing this and that, which I, you know, so be it. But the bottom line of it is, we came back and won the game.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. I'm looking at the news clip now, and it's funny, your quote is like, "That's just the nature of my game. I'm not ashamed to say I'm a rough physical player, aggressive," and everybody on the team kind of backs it up. PJ right. says, "We're not going to change the way we're playing. Like, that's just our style of play." And Tim Hardaway says the same thing. You know, we're playing well. We've done it before. We'll do it again. So it's just it's funny how everybody kind of sticks to the same idea that, you know, this, we're just aggressive. That's just who we are. You better get used to it.
I mean, that's just the way we played. I mean, shoot. I mean, it's like, you know, I look at it anytime I was on the court, it's either me or you. It's like it's like the ultimate combat for me. It's like I'm a warrior and you're coming at me. So either I'm gonna make it through or you're gonna make it through. And like I said, at that time they were beating us really bad. I mean, I think we may have been down close to 20 at one point. And they were coming at us, man. And, you know, this was a play in which it was a statement play for either him or me, because he was going to try and ring the bell on me. And I now can't do it today.
All right. Last question, Keith, before I let you go. One of the things I kind of keep talking to players on the organization about, it's not just players. I mean, Shane Battier, coaches, everybody, you know, just this idea that with the Heat, you're part of a family. I remember one of the last interviews I was able to do before the coronavirus hit and changed the end of the season was with Solomon Hill, who had just joined the team before the All-Star break. And he was telling me, he was just asking around, and what stood out to him was how people have been with this organization for 10 plus years. And that's on the you know, the lesser end of it, that there have some guys like you who have been there for 20 plus 30 years almost. Right. And What's that like to be part of an organization where once you go into it, you could be a quote-unquote Heat lifer for decades?
Well, I think what it is just that, you know, you go in with an opportunity to be a part of something really good. And there is a low turnover rate for a reason, because I think from top to bottom, there's a respect for each person, for what they bring to the table. You're not going to have someone that not, you know, in it, so to speak. So if you get an opportunity to be a part of it and you say, I'm in, you know, you'll be in until there's something, until you prove that you don't want to be there anymore. You know, it's a great organization, and it's a great city to live in, and, you know, the diversity of the city, and, you know, the people that you get a chance to meet at the games and the people that you get a chance to work with. And you'll find that those that work there really care about what they're doing. And it's fun to be a part of. It's fun to be a part of. And I mean, we all are challenged, you know, in the basketball, you know, we all are challenged to continue to make it a championship organization. And every day, you know, I wake up, I watch, you know, I'm looking at players every day, and I'm trying to help find players that will continue success for us and get us back to a point where we'll have an opportunity to play for a championship again.
Yeah. How has your job been challenged by everything that's gone on over the last few months? I mean, it must make the trying to find a player like that with such limited footage, and you can't scout them the way that you're so accustomed to. Is it a new challenge that you're finding a way to get around, or is every team going to be impacted similarly? You think it's going to just change the way the draft plays out if it ever winds up playing out?
Well, thank God for technology. I mean, you know, we watch a lot of film. I watch film, you know, during the season as well as when I see them live.
Right.
So most of the players I've seen live, and now all I do now, film work, is just basically a confirmation viewing for me. But there are some kids in which, you know, they throw their name into the draft and you haven't had a chance to see them live. It's tougher on the player, I think, than our evaluation process, because there are some kids out there that could actually have the skill set to be in the NBA and play, but with this pandemic, not being able to get out and see them right now, you know, I think a lot of people will start to err on the side of safety.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's going to be some safe picks that people say, well, I know this kid can do this, I know he can do that, and he's not going to hurt us here, so, you know, he's safe at this pick. You know, whether we get a chance to see a kid live again, you know, that remains to be seen, but with Zoom and team apps now, you can actually do interviews and speak to them live, so to speak, you know, through video.
Right.
You know, a lot of it makes getting it makes going out and getting intel and finding out about the kid off the court more important than actually being on the court, because you can see the skill set on film. Yeah. What you want to find out now is what type of kid is he? What's right. his work ethic and all these other things we spoke of earlier. That's the most important part right now. And with the pandemic, it's actually been helpful because most coaches are at home or they're near a phone. So you can actually, you know, gather information. You know, even though we're in a pandemic and we can't travel, this is the most I've been at home since probably high school. It's still been productive. I mean, we've been able to evaluate and meet and talk about kids and go on with our process as if the draft is going to take place at its normal time.
All right. I asked Shane this when I had him on the show, so I got to ask you, how do you stack up the 72-10 Chicago Bulls versus that 66-16 Miami Heat team, which Shane was a part of and won 27 straight games? Because Shane says the Heat, he likes his chances with his guys. You played against Michael Jordan. You played against that team. You actually were able to beat them. So one of the 10 wins came from the Heat. Where do you see that matchup having played out?
I think what would end up happening is that you would have some really good battles with Michael and Dwayne. Then you would have LeBron and Scotty. But you know, I think those four guys would do their thing. The interesting part would be when the role players came into play.
Sure.
Could Chris, and I'm not going to call, well, could Chris manage and go against
Rodman?
Go against Rodman on a nightly basis, you know. Derek Harper at the point could we handle him? I mean, it's a lot. I can't say. I would like to see it, but it's hard for me to say who would win, but it would be a very good matchup, provided everyone stayed healthy.
Sure.
Provided everyone's healthy going in, both teams are healthy going in, it would be fun. You probably have to give a nod to Jordan over Dwayne slightly, and you got to give a nod probably to LeBron over Scotty. You know, but after that, you know, it's a very balanced and well matched. Both teams would be. I don't see any blowouts happening. Let's put it that way on either side.
Yeah, I mean, maybe give Miami an edge with a 3-point shooting just because it wasn't part of the
right.
the era. But yeah, either way, it would still. I mean, the defense on those '90s Bulls teams was pretty phenomenal.
Well, see, if you put the Bulls in the 2000s, that means you got to put the Heat, the 2000s, back in the 90s.
Yeah.
The physicality of that era, it would be interesting to see the mindset and the and how LeBron and Dwayne and Chris would handle the physicality of those guys at that time. So it's both sides. You got advantages on both sides and you got disadvantages. I would think it would probably go to game seven, and whoever made the fewest mistakes would win.
That's a good point. That's a good way to leave it off. After 30 years with the Heat organization, I feel like we could talk for hours and I'd still be asking you questions about the team and about your career. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and to help my listeners understand a little bit more about your fantastic career and time with one of the best organizations in professional sports. So thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Keith for being a part of the show. I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. Coming up later this week, I'll be opening up the mailbag as well as looking at free agency, the draft, and of course providing the latest news and notes about what's going on around the NBA as we gear up for the resumption of the NBA season. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, and you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ravel signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Please stay safe.
Wrap it up, B.